Now, last Sunday, we were thinking about how the gospel came to Europe 2,000 years ago. We were in Acts chapter 16, where the Apostle Paul goes to Philippi. And if you can remember, the three big takeaway points were, number one, God directed his servants there. That's why the gospel came to Europe, and it's how the gospel came to Europe. The second takeaway point was this: after Lydia, the Lord opened Lydia's heart, Lydia, in response, opened her home, and she placed her material resources at the disposal of the gospel. The third takeaway point came with the jailer. The first thing he did when he received this gospel message was he washed the wounds of the servants of God. He entered into the fellowship of the wounded. Those three principles are still 100% relevant today to all missionary endeavor. And we will be revisiting them in a moment. But last Wednesday evening, I shared with some of you the report on the needs and the challenges and the opportunities of the gospel in Slovenia and in some of the surrounding countries there in the Balkans region today. And I said that these three meetings were a package deal. So this morning, what we're going to do is we're going to go back to Philippi, and we're going to check in on that embryonic work at Philippi about 10 years after Paul first brought the gospel to them. And we're going to see how that work developed and evolved in line with its first principles. We're going to see how the church at Philippi grew into playing its part in God's mission in the world. And it will just be interesting to see where, at the end of these three meetings, where they bring us to land here in Castlereagh Fellowship, as we seek to discern what our part is in God's unfolding mission in our world today. So we are going to be in Paul's letter to the Philippians this morning. As I say, the probable background to this is that it's about 10 or 12 years after Paul brought the gospel to Philippi. Paul now finds himself in prison, almost certainly at Rome. He's awaiting trial. But what he does is he writes to the church at Philippi. And in many ways, the letter to the Philippians reads like a prayer letter from a missionary to a supporter church. So what I'm going to do this morning is I'm just going to move through Paul's letter to the Philippians, focusing on some verses here and there which show us what true gospel partnership looks like in action. How those first principles from when the gospel arrived in Philippi, how it took root in the lives of the people who came to know Jesus Christ, how they found their role in God's unfolding mission. So if you turn, please, to, well, what are very popular verses. Chapter 1, verse 3. Paul writes, I thank my God every time I remember you. In all of my prayers for all of you, I always pray with joy because of your partnership in the gospel from the first day until now, being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion against the day of Jesus Christ. It's right for me to feel this way about all of you, since I have you in my heart. For whether I am in chains or defending and confirming the gospel, all of you share in God's grace with me. God can testify how I long for all of you with the affection of Christ Jesus. And this is my prayer, that your love may abound more and more in knowledge and depth of insight, so that you may be able to discern what is best and may be pure and blameless until the day of Christ, filled with the fruit of righteousness that comes through Jesus Christ to the glory and praise of God. Right over these verses, right over this letter, right over the relationship between Paul and the Philippian church, two words: gospel partnership. And it extends, Paul says, from the first day, from day one. And you know, as Paul writes that, you know, that he's thanking God when he thinks about these believers. Every time he comes to pray, he's full of thanks because of their partnership in the gospel with him from day one. We know some of the individuals that Paul has in mind when he says that. He thinks of Lydia and her household. He thinks of the Philippian jailer and his household. You know, this is not some sort of generic, punched out thank you. No, he's got the people in mind. And what he says here, it's intimate, it's warm, it's sincere. No wonder verse 3 is taken all the time and put on to, verse 5, the verse 4, I'm going to keep going, the Christian greetings cards, you know. And let's be honest, you know, maybe it's a bit of sentimentalism, you know, in all my prayers, every time I think about you, in this case, it was real. This was authentic. And do you see what infuses Paul and the Philippians' relationship in those verses? Prayer, thankfulness, joy, and confidence. They're all mentioned. Wouldn't it be a magnificent thing, brothers and sisters, that when our mission partners think of Castlereagh Fellowship, they pray to God with thanks, and they have joy in their hearts, and they have confidence that we go forward together? Wouldn't that be a great thing? This isn't just sentiment, and it's certainly not overstatement. Paul knows that the Philippians are on the inside of his situation with him. He's in prison awaiting trial. But you know how he knows they're with him? Well, he tells us he has them in his heart. And more than that, he is aware that they all share on the inside of God's grace with him. In the grace of God, they've been brought together, and they're present together in spirit and in heart. They know a divine togetherness that God has forged in the gospel. And so Paul prays for his gospel partners, that they will grow in love and discernment and holiness, and that they'll grow in such a way that there's going to be this great harvest of righteousness. Verse 11, on the day of Jesus Christ, when he's revealed, when it's all done, there's going to be fruit in the lives of his partners. And Paul's praying for them. That's a very important thing to note about genuine missionary partnership. Prayer is two ways. The missionaries pray for the supporting church. The supporting church prays for the missionaries. You know, as I read that section, it's a section I absolutely love. But I just think, what a meaningful relationship. What a true partnership existed between Paul and the Philippian believers, the church at Philippi. And it's just so attractive, isn't it? It's so desirable. Well, the rest of the letter then lets us see what that partnership looked like in practice. What was actually involved in this two-way relationship that brought such joy to the apostle, even in a prison cell, even with the threat of death hanging over him. He had joy because of his brothers and sisters. And you go down to verse 19. Let me read the last phrase of verse 18 of chapter 1. Paul says, yes, and I will continue to rejoice. He's been explaining what has happened to him, how it's fallen out for the furtherance of the gospel. He says, I'll continue to rejoice, verse 19, for I know that through your prayers and the help given by the Spirit of Jesus Christ, what has happened to me will turn out for my deliverance. May say salvation in your version. It's the idea of deliverance. Now, I want you to get what Paul is saying here. Through your prayers and the help given by the Spirit, I know what's going to lead to my deliverance. Now, by reading the verses that follow, Paul explains that that deliverance could come in one of two ways. Here were the options. He would be released from prison, and he would go to serve and to be fruitful in his labours for their benefits again. That was one option. The other way deliverance could come would be that he was freed from his body in this world, and he would go to be with Christ, which was very far better. And he's on the horns of this dilemma, but he says, you know, I'm convinced that for your benefit, I'm going to remain. But don't miss this, folks. Paul says that the Philippians' prayers in some way will input into how the Lord takes the situation forward. The saints at Philippi, their prayers will directly impact upon the future that Paul has, that the Lord has in store for Paul. In the sovereign purposes of God, their prayers were going to play a part, were going to make a difference. That's just what the text says. Can't explain it. Any true missionary partnership starts here and continues here with prayer. If we are not praying for the missionaries that we say we are in partnership with, we may have a relationship with them, I wouldn't deny that, but it's not gospel partnership. Gospel partnerships, unless we want to devalue the currency completely, gospel partnerships are permeated with prayer. And Paul knew that the Philippians were praying for him and that their prayers were going to impact his future. There's a challenge. Do our mission partners know that such is our faithfulness in prayer for them that it's actually going to change things on the ground for them in conformity with the sovereign purposes of God? But it's still real. Go down to verse 27. Because the next, we've seen gospel partnership, this heart relationship from day one. We've seen the role of prayer in this. Now, in these verses, we're going to see that the Philippians were on the inside of Paul's struggles. They were fellow sufferers. You see, he outlines the two options. Maybe he's going to be released and go on living in this world and serving Christ. Maybe his life's going to be ended and he's going to be with Christ. But then he says in verse 7, see, whatever happens, conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ. Then whether I come and see you or only hear about you in my absence, I will know that you stand firm in one spirit, contending as one man for the faith of the gospel, without being frightened in any way by those who oppose you. This is a sign to them that they will be destroyed, but that you will be saved, and that by God. For it has been granted to you on behalf of Christ, not only to believe on him, but also to suffer for him, since you are going through the same struggle you saw that I had, and now hear that I still have. Paul talks in these verses of contending, of fear, of opposition, of suffering, and of struggling. And what Paul is saying is that the struggles that they had witnessed him pass through at the start of their gospel relationship, well, they're still continuing for Paul a decade later, and they've now engulfed the Philippians themselves. They have entered the fellowship of the wounded. And Paul is stressing here, there's absolutely nothing abnormal or unusual about their experience. In fact, it's God's grace that they're suffering. Because God has given you not only to believe on Christ, but also to suffer for his name. It's a gift from God. And they now experience a oneness of spirit, a solidarity of spirit that's now forged between Paul and the Philippians in the crucible of affliction. They know what it is to be in the trenches together. And they draw mutual encouragement from each other's faithfulness when they're up against it. Every one of the missionaries that I shared about on Wednesday evening past, every one of them operates in a context where believers are in an extreme minority, where they are viewed with a certain level of suspicion, and where they are often misunderstood and indeed misrepresented. That is their everyday experience. That is the air they breathe 24/7. Now, please don't misunderstand me when I say this. You know, this is the shallow end of the pool when it comes to bearing hardship for Jesus Christ. The issue for us is, do we even dip a toe in it? Do we even know that? This is the shallow end of the pool. I'm not overstating this. But I think as mission partners, we want to acknowledge the privileged and protected situation that we find ourselves in. But how much do you think it means to these guys living in very small pockets of believers where they know that they are being carried in the hearts of their brothers and sisters here, who love them and who understand in measure what they are going through, who in spirit choose to enter into their burdens and the challenges that they deal with daily. How much do you think that means to them? Go down to verse 17 of chapter 2. Here's something else Paul says. But even if I am being poured out like a drink offering on the sacrifice and service coming from their faith, from your faith, right? I am glad and rejoice with all of you. So you too should be glad and rejoice with me. The Philippians and Paul are serving and worshipping God together. They are physically apart. But Paul says, no, this is a joint enterprise in serving and worshipping God. To understand what he's getting at, you really need to go back into Numbers 15. This is tabernacle talk about drink offerings. Paul says, I just delight to be a drink offering that accompanies the sacrifice, which is the Philippian service for God. If you read how the sacrifices and all the ritual was conducted, the drink offering was the last finishing detail on the sacrifice being presented to God. Note who the big deal is here, as Paul talks in this way. Can you think of a better description of the relationship that we desire to have with our missionary partners? Oh, that we might be the accompanying drink offering offered alongside the sacrifice of their service for Christ. That's all Paul wanted to be. It's you guys. There's the sacrifice for God. I'm just an accompanying drink offering. All for Castlereagh Fellowship to be an accompanying drink offering for those guys in Slovenia and Serbia and Croatia and Peru. Just the drink offering offered in a joint act of worship. Go on down to chapter 2, verse 25, because we're going to get very practical now. We're going to think about people first. This is what Paul says in verse 25 of chapter 2. But I think it necessary to send back to you Epaphroditus, my brother, fellow worker, and fellow soldier, who's also your messenger, whom you sent to take care of my needs. For he longs for all of you and is distressed because you heard he was ill. Indeed, he was ill and almost died. But God had mercy on him, and not on him only, but also on me, to spare me sorrow upon sorrow. Therefore, I'm all the more eager to send him, so that when you see him again, you may be glad and I may have less anxiety. Welcome him in the Lord with great joy, and honour men like him, because he almost died for the work of Christ, risking his life to make up for the help that you could not give me. Verse 25, whom you sent to take care of my needs. Verse 30, to make up for the help that you could not give me. Epaphroditus was the Philippians' apostle, with a small a, to the apostle. That's what the word messenger here is. It's the word apostle. He was their messenger, sent with their authority. The Philippians' partnership with Paul involved companionship. Epaphroditus literally embodied the affection that they had for Paul. He made it real in that prison cell. He gave practical expression to it. He involved himself voluntarily in Paul's detention, and it nearly cost him his life. You know, sometimes it's only possible to be partners at a distance. But not always. How much clearer a picture the Philippians must have had of Paul's situation when Epaphroditus arrived back. Because they had sent someone who'd entered into it, who knew it firsthand, and he brought that back. It's good to invest in being with our partners where that is possible. My travel buddy for Slovenia for 3 whole days, as it turned out, was Tom Greer. Tom Greer is the Presbyterian minister of Molesworth Presbyterian, which is Maud Kales' church. Tom said that in 40 years, nobody has ever gone with Maud. It's too hardcore, quite frankly, the Congo. But that's not the case in nearly every situation in missionary work now. It's not the case. Now, I'm not talking about mission tourism. I'm not talking about imposing yourselves on our missionaries, but in many, many situations, there's nothing more wonderful and encouraging and fortifying for that relationship than to get troops on the ground. The Philippians did it. They made a difference through whom they sent. Final area, and this is where I wanted to land specifically. Verse 10 of chapter 4. This is amazing. Practical support in terms of personnel, yeah, but practical support in terms of material provision. Chapter 4, verse 10. I rejoice greatly in the Lord that at last you have renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you have been concerned, but you had no opportunity to show it. I'm not saying this because I'm in need, for I've learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do everything through him who strengthens me. Yet it was good of you to share in my troubles. Moreover, as you Philippians know, in the early days of your acquaintance of the gospel, when I set out from Macedonia, not one church shared with me in the matter of giving and receiving except you only. For even when I was in Thessalonica, you sent me aid again and again when I was in need. Not that I'm looking for a gift, but I'm looking for what may be credited to your account. I have received full payment, and even more, I'm amply supplied now that I've received from Epaphroditus the gifts you sent. They are a fragrant offering, an acceptable sacrifice pleasing to God, and my God will meet all your needs according to his glorious riches in Christ Jesus. You have renewed your concern for me. You had no opportunity until now. It was good of you to share in my troubles. Do you know something I find absolutely fascinating about Paul? This was an epiphany for me years ago. Paul never said thank you to the Philippians or to any other believers ever for what they gave to him. What an ignorant man. Do you know what he did? He always thanked God for what his brothers and sisters did for him. He wasn't being impolite. He wasn't being ungrateful. He was elevating the giving of his brothers and sisters, and he was attributing it to God being at work through his grace in the lives of his people. You go through the New Testament and test that theory. He elevates it and says, this is a God thing. I thank God for what you've done. That's the highest form of praise you can give to a believer. And it is true to say that Paul had a unique relationship with the Philippian church. He tells us precisely that in verse 15. Not one church, except you guys had this sharing relationship with me. And he tells us how far back that practical partnership extends. He says it was right from the early days of your acquaintance with the gospel. Think Lydia. Think her household. Think the Philippian jailer. Think his household. Right from day one, they'd got this two-way street. And he tells us, you know, he said, look, I hadn't got any further than Thessalonica, which was not far. And you had already sent multiple times. You'd sent help to me there. Paul, of course, is at pains to say, you know, whilst his needs were real, he knew that his sufficiency lay ultimately in Jesus Christ and what Jesus Christ would provide for him. But he tells them, I delight in the fact that you Philippians have chosen to play a role in that provision in my life. He wasn't looking for anything from the Philippians. In fact, his motivation was that they would accrue a spiritual balance against the day of Jesus Christ. And so we meet Epaphroditus again. Because he was the man who brought the practical assistance from Philippi to the prison cell. What did the Philippians send that Epaphroditus brought? We don't know. But whatever he brought, it was a form of spiritual deodorant, because God says he found it a sweet smell, a fragrant offering, something that brought him pleasure. In verse 18, we are told that God found the Philippians' practical gifts acceptable offerings and sacrifices. That is in the text. What they sent, material help, God says, there's a sacrifice and offering I accept. There is a lovely play in words here which is lost to us in English, but the Greek word for sweet smell or fragrant offering in the NIV, it's the word eudia. Now, there was an actual Eudia in the church at Philippi, but she had gone off a bit, because Eudia and Syntyche, two gospel workers, were no longer united and needed to take an all-over gospel unity body wash. But God saw what was happening as Paul received that help, and he says, this is something that brings me pure delight. I find this an acceptable thing. And just one final observation as I come to conclude here. Do you see the confidence that Paul has in these Philippians going forward? Verse 19. There's a great promise there. They'll never outgive God. They'll never out. But who's that promise to? And in what context is it found? It's found in a church giving itself sacrificially to the work of mission. God will supply all their needs. They'll never outgive God. So let me just pull this together, what we've been thinking about in these three sessions. When we thought about the gospel coming to Europe for a first time, what did we see? We saw that God sovereignly directed the entire enterprise. His people were in the flow of his purposes and he could do with them what he wanted. Still required today, guys. Secondly, we saw Lydia throwing open her home and placing all her resources at the disposal of the gospel. 100% still required for missionary partnership today. We saw the jailer grasping that it was a costly thing to see the gospel advance in this dark world. Still required in missionary partners today. If we want to know the power of his resurrection, we'll know the fellowship of his sufferings. And the work that commenced 2,000 years ago, it still continues today. Europe still needs to be evangelized. Much of Europe needs to be re-evangelized. And in the sovereignty of God, here in Castlereagh Fellowship, we have been brought alongside some who are giving their lives to that endeavor today. So will we be like the Philippians? Will we choose to enter into, to maintain and to develop mission partnerships that will fill us and them with thankfulness and joy and confidence going forward? Will we carry each other in our hearts and in our prayers? Will we give ourselves to prayer for our mission partners, knowing that our prayers will make a difference on the ground in their situations? Will we make their struggles and hardships our own? Will we share their pain, their frustrations, their longings? Will we stand firm together as one man, united in outlook and spirit? Will we be a drink offering poured out alongside our brethren's faithful service in the hard places of Europe? Will we send them assistance when they need it, and when we have the means and the opportunity to do so? Will we send our people to encourage and support them where it is appropriate to do so? Will we help meet their material and ministry needs as an act of worship to the Lord? The Philippians did every single one of those things I've just itemized. It will be how we answer those questions over the coming days and months and years that will determine whether we have actually entered into mission partnership or not. My prayer is simply this: may God, who has begun a good work in us, carry it to completion against the coming day of Jesus Christ.